Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello and welcome to another edition of Only Murders in My Mind. I have my co-presenter on her own today, Liz Hedgecock. Hi, Liz.
Hiya.
And there's a gap where Mike usually sits.
There is.
On the last few episodes, you may or may have not noticed Mike had a bit of a cough. Well, the bit of a cough's got a bit worse. So he's at home, tucked up at the moment. Get well soon, Mike. We're missing you. But can I just take this opportunity to tell you that, you know, to take your mind off not being well, you could get on with your novella. You know.
Oh, that was a bit low.
Was that too harsh?
The thing is, as two crime writers, we were mysteriously missing a third.
Yeah, it's a bit bad.
Don't think the worst, okay?
Anyway.
Yeah. We are still three because...
today we have a guest speaker, Bob Stone. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
I was going to say, we've got somebody here. You're as rare as hen's teeth, Bob, because Bob owns an independent bookshop, and there aren't many about anymore. I believe you're also right in some capacity. Are you a writer?
In some capacity, yes.
He absolutely is a writer. Honestly, Bob.
What do you write?
A variety of things. I've written a young adult fantasy trilogy. But my last few books have been, I suppose you'd call, general fiction, really. And absolutely not crime at all.
But you are a crime reader, because we've had conversations about Agatha Christie.
I am a crime reader, which is probably why I don't write it. I've read too many good ones.
Indeed. But yes, Bob runs the awesome Right Blown Books, which is in Waterloo, so over Liverpool way.
Right. And Liz and you have a seller-buyer relationship here, don't you? So, Liz, how did you first meet Bob? What capacity?
Let me think. I think it was online, in the way that these things often are, because I'm in Warrington. And I think Bob had posted on a group saying, you know, I'm an independent bookshop owner and I'm looking for new authors to stock. So I thought, right, okay then. And sent an email and we got chatting and I went over with some books and Bob agreed to stock some of them. And he's even managed to sell some. So well done, Bob, basically.
It's more my customers than me. I have at least one absolute devotee who will buy everything that comes out by Liz Hedgecock. And, well, speaking of rarer than hen's teeth, loyal customers like that are pretty rare. But, and it is a constant source of frustration to me that I do stock a lot of books by independent authors, and trying to get the message over that independent books are or can be just as good as books that have been lucky enough to be published by the big publishers. It's an uphill struggle, but I like to, you know, throw my weight behind good independent authors like Liz.
Oh, thank you. I haven't even paid him for this show.
And I do like to introduce them to customers.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, and that is so good to hear. I used to live in Cumbria and I was associated there with an independent bookshop. But you don't see many about these days. And especially to be able to support, sort of authors that go down the indie route for publishing is really sort of gladdens the heart, Bob. It really does. So obviously, Liz and I, but I write crime as well. My crime tends to be a bit more gory and...
That's an understatement.
think Val McDermott, so that type of crime. But what is it about crime that people like? I mean, we buy it, we watch it, we listen to it.
I think we all love a mystery. Everybody loves a mystery. And when you think about, I was thinking about this when I was trying to think of interesting things to say today. so much fiction, whether it's actually classed as crime or thriller or mystery, so much fiction contains a mystery of one kind or another anyway. If you think about even going back to The Great Expectations, one of the central plot points of that is the mystery of who Pip's benefactor is. And that runs right through the book. Even actually in Mills and Boone romance novels, the handsome Dr. Studley's usually got a secret that has to be discovered throughout the book. There's always a mystery. And we all like to try and work out what it is ahead of the reveal. And I think that's why, I mean, whodunits are probably still among the most popular. I must admit, I was brought up on crime fiction. I'm not quite sure what my parents were trying to tell me, but I was quite an advanced reader from a very early age. And when it got to the point where I must have been about 10 or 11, I was getting bored with the books at the school were foisting on me. So my parents, who are both really voracious readers, my mother put me on to Agatha Christie, said, try this. And I was absolutely obsessed. I worked my way right the way through all Agatha Christie's books. To such an extent that my mum tried to then introduce me to authors like Naya Marsh and Marjorie Allingham, thinking that I'd like them because I liked Agatha Christie. And I didn't, because they weren't Agatha Christie.
Yeah.
It was strange. I was absolutely obsessed. And I've loved crime fiction ever since, really.
It's interesting. Out of all the episodes we've done so far, we did one on Agatha Christie. Mm-hmm. And that the listening numbers for that just shot up over about 3 days. So she still holds that pull for people to want to listen about what we were talking about. Yeah,
definitely.
Well, she set the benchmark, really.
She did.
Mystery fiction. So much so that my wife and I, we watch sort of various mystery programs on television and stuff. And because my wife is actually even more obsessed with Agatha Christie, more the televised versions than the books. But if there's a quiet moment, there's nothing else on telly, so stick a Poirot on or a Miss Marple. But now we can sort of, we watch other ones and we'll say, Agatha Christie did that. The plot points are almost a direct lift. It's very difficult to come up. I mean, I'm sure you must find this, Liz, writing crime fiction yourself. It's quite difficult to come up with something that Agatha Christie didn't do in one way or another. So much so that she repeated herself quite lots of times as well. But that's another story. But no, we all love a mystery, I think.
In your shop, who sells, when it comes to crime fiction, who sells best?
It's interesting because there have been significant shifts over the years. I have different species of customers. I have the customers who have come in specifically for a particular book that they've heard about or a particular series that they're following. But I also get the what I call the proper bookshop customers, the ones who come in with no clear idea, really, but want to browse. But the customers who come in, for the ones who are following the trend, if we could put it like that, you can see the sort of the patterns in reading habits. And things have shifted. There was a whole period which started, I think, with Gone Girl.
Oh, yeah.
The books that usually contained either the word girl or the word lie in the title, where the thriller's based around an unreliable narrator usually, which became extremely tedious after you'd read one or two because you could see exactly where it was going. But things have now shifted. I mean, thanks to Mr. Osman, things have more shifted toward the cozy crime, a shift now towards that. And I think I wonder whether COVID's had anything to do with that, the pandemic, because there was so much misery around. I think it seems that people taste seems to be shifting more towards something a bit more comfortable. I don't know. It could just simply be the publishing seems to work in curious ways. I've noticed over the years there's very much a, if you like that, you'll like this idea.
I blame Amazon for that.
One book becomes extremely popular, and suddenly the shelves of books that have published books just like it. Hence, anybody who likes to write cozy crime, for example, has been done a massive favour by Richard Osman.
Definitely, yeah.
The number of books now with covers that you would mistake for a Richard Osman book.
We talked about this, yeah.
I couldn't possibly comment.
There's a lot of very good books. And quite what will happen next, what the next trend is going to be. We seem to have shifted away from the more, again, there was a whole period where all anybody wanted was grim Scandinavian books.
Yeah.
There's a huge market for them at one time. And I think people are now depressed enough with them. They want cheering up a little bit.
It's interesting, yeah, actually, because my best-selling book, the one that I've sold, that sold really well, was autobiographical one of my nursing career called Just a Little Prick. And I did a follow-up to that, which was Millions of Little Pricks, My Pandemic, and it has not sold well at all. And I think probably you're right. I think people are going, I've had enough of that. I don't want to even think about it anymore.
Well, it changed when going, what we were saying before about my own writing. Having written a dystopian fantasy trilogy, the third one actually came out in the April of 2020, so never got launched and no one ever really noticed it. And I was sitting there during the pandemic thinking, I've got all this time to write. What shall I write? Why would I write dystopian fiction when we're all living through it? Nobody's going to want to read it when we all come out of this. And it just stalled me completely for a long time. But I mean, I don't know. Market trends are a strange thing. And I think as writers, if we knew what the next one was going to be, we'd all be writing it now.
Quids in.
Getting ready for it. But unfortunately, we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, who could have seen 50 Shades of Grey?
Exactly.
These things can be quite inexplicable at times.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, on the thing of forecasting trends, there is a company called Kaelytics, and they do various reports on genres, and they'll kind of analyze all the data. They scrape, I don't know what they scrape in terms of data, but they'll, like, you know, say what's getting more popular, what's maybe, you know, lagging a bit, even things like analyzing what the covers look like and stuff like that. So there is information out there.
Mm. Now you're giving a huge secret away there, Liz. I always thought you were psychic in some way, because you always seem to be right there. Right on.
I haven't actually bought any of these reports, so I think I've just, you know, occasionally got lucky. But hey,
now, so you've told us what got you into reading crime. So at this present day, who would you say your favourite author was? Who would you look for in crime books?
There's a few. I suppose not exactly crime, but I did become addicted to Mick Herron's Slough House.
Oh yes,
series.
I finished those now. I haven't got any more.
I have actually become pusher on those to a number of customers who fed their addictions.
They are great, though. Have you read them, Carol?
No.
Oh, you must do.
One of the best book series I've come across for a very long time. Consistently good and consistently surprising, because that's something that's... Having read an awful lot of fiction, particularly an awful lot of thriller and crime fiction, I have become extremely cynical over the years in that it's quite hard to surprise me. Again, if we're sort of watching something at home, I do have to keep my mouth shut because that can be very annoying. I spot the patterns in stuff of the same kind. For example, I mean, we love watching Death in Paradise like most people, and I have to bite my tongue from saying, that's the featured actor or actress this week. They're the victim or the murderer. If they're not the victim, they'll be the murderer. They usually are. So I do like authors can surprise me, and Mick Herron's books do constantly. The twists do surprise me. I'm a big fan of Chris Brookmyre as well. I love Chris Brookmyre's work. Although he's toned down a little bit over the years. I think he changed publishers and has toned down slightly. The earlier Jack Parlavane novels were Brilliant. Wonderful black humour.
Oh, I remember reading Quite Ugly one morning and just being like, what? What? Yeah, my husband's a big Brookmeyer fan.
Lovely cynical voice, the narration. But his books are still very good. To be honest, the question of what I read, it's a bit, as a bookseller, it's a bit like, you know how they say the shoemaker's children have the worst shoes. I currently read probably less than I've ever done at any time in my life, through choice. I mean, through books that I want to read. I have a massive list of books that I want to get to and I want to read. And then somebody sends me a book to beta read or a book to edit, or I've got an author coming into the shop, so I read their book to make sure, obviously have an opinion on it. And I actually have very little time to read anything that I particularly want to read. There's a number of, because there's quite a lot of crime that I want to read yesterday. I believe that Denise Mina is bringing out a new Raymond Chandler book. A new Philip Marlowe book.
Right.
That's coming out very shortly, which I'll be quite intrigued to read with some trepidation, as, I mean, Raymond Chandler's books are, again, they're some of my favourites. I love the Philip Marlowe books. So I'm always very wary about these continuations. I've not read any of Sophie Hannah's Agatha Christie books, the Poirot ones. That, to me, I've done it on principle, though, because Agatha Christie did not want Poirot continued after her death. That's why she killed him.
Yeah.
So I think by not reading them, I'm following her wishes. And also, I think I don't know, inevitably find them disappointing, probably. But I would like to read this new Denise Mina one. That looks interesting.
Bob, do you think there's any gaps in the crime writers market, or have we done everything?
I've often thought about that, because I thought if there is one, I could try and fill it.
Yeah.
It's when you sort of, if we're sort of thinking about, for example, in the cozy crime genre, I think most occupations have played detective in one way or another.
Yes.
Whatever business you might own, there's been booksellers, everybody that you can think of now solves crime, clearly apart from the police if you look at the crime figures. But I can't see a gap, purely because there is so much crime fiction out there. And if nobody else has written it, James Patterson's probably got one of his slaves to write it. I imagine James Patterson's authors all being chained up in a cellar somewhere, like the infant monkeys.
I remember reading about, you've probably got the Beast Quest books in Right Blend, but Adam Blade, who writes the Beast Quest books, isn't a real person. It's some sort of writer's collective, and I imagine them all, yeah, in a basement somewhere.
Somebody with a whip.
Type writers. Yeah, very much so.
You can only imagine what the stench of the place is like.
Oh, don't.
There's a good story for a crime book.
Yeah.
They don't work.
Indeed.
Kill
yeah,
them
maybe
off.
Someone who owns some sort of fiction factory who also solves mysteries.
Yeah.
There we go.
Oh, who maybe owns a bookshop.
Yeah. You go, Bob. There's your next one.
A lot of money.
The speed I write compared to the speed you write, Liz. You'll have a trilogy written before I can get started.
Have you got a cellar, Bob?
I haven't got a cellar, no.
Oh, shucks, because a lot of my bodies end up in cellars.
They do.
Big question, what can you offer the general public that the big book outlets can't? And hopefully you do get supported by the general public, because it's not an easy job these days, is it?
It's very tough. I mean, you could more spin the question on its head and say, what can they offer the public that I can't? Like price, for example. I mean, I had a customer in just yesterday who sniffed us $8.99 for a paperback. And a lot of these places do buy one, get one half price now, don't they? And I had to point out that if I did that, I wouldn't be here this time next year.
Yeah.
Yes.
Small independent bookshops, I think, can offer a much more personal service. I have regular customers, and I know, I do some of my ordering on the basis of, that one's, I know who will like that. So I can sort of, I had a customer who joked once, it's amazing how I just seem to have the right books on the shelf. And I did have to point out that it was actually because I know what sort of books she likes and I make sure I've got them there for her to accidentally discover on the shelf. I was just thinking the bigger shops can't do. And also, I don't want to sound too cynical about it, but I think small shops like mine have got an awful lot more freedom in terms of what we can stock. A lot of the bigger shops are, to one extent or another, publisher-led, that they stock what the publishers tell them to make bestsellers.
I mean, the other thing is, if you go into Waterstones and you see all the stuff on the tables, then that's probably not been determined by the booksellers at Waterstones. It's, a matter of publishers paying for that space.
I know that they do that at W.H. Smith. So I've heard that publishers pay to be on the bestseller list at Smith's or on the promotional tables. And it would be nice to be able to get involved in that kind of thing here, but we haven't got the money for a start.
But the thing is also, if you recommend a book to a customer then you're doing that on the basis of, I think you'll like that because you'll like this, and it's not a case
yes.
of...
Yes, yes. I think that's it. That you can, with independent shops, you can trust the advice that you get, because the only reason that I'm doing it is because I want you to be happy with the book and come back for another one soon. It does me no favours at all to recommend books that I don't think a customer's going to like. They have to be able to trust me.
Yeah. Can you tell which crime books will sell well at Right Blend? Do you ever read through catalogues or, go through Gardeners and think like, right, I'm definitely ordering that one because I know that will do well here?
Well, only in the sense that I can see if a book's coming out, I know who I can sell it to. In terms of books that I just buy in and I think look good and put in the window and hope somebody buys, I'm more often surprised by the ones that don't. The ones that I think, that's a winner. That's a surefire winner. And I still have because nobody's bought them. I get more surprised that way. The other way around, I can tailor. I know customers who, I've got a customer who loves books like Stuart McBride and authors like that. And if there's something along those lines coming out, I'll make sure I've got that in for the next time he calls in. I have another gentleman who rings me every week, and I know the sort of books he likes. He likes James Patterson. He likes the Martina Cole, Roberta Craig, Kimberly Chambers, Lady Bot, I suppose, sort of books. The ones that are entirely interchangeable. They just have the author's name in big letters and a big picture of a lady's face on the front of them. He likes all those.
He's cynic, Bob.
He likes the historical fiction like Bernard Cornwell and Simon Scarrow and Con Ingleton as well. So if a new one of those comes out, I'll make sure I get him because I know George Elias. But actually, the ones that I think look good and put in the window can go either way. It's strange. But again, a lot of that is led by what's the latest thing, what's the most popular thing.
Have you found that the fact, my son-in-law absolutely hates ebooks. He hates them. And he will go into a shop like yours every time and actually hold a book in his hand. Has it impacted much? I'm going back now thinking about when we were in lockdown and things like that.
Well, I think lockdown affected the trade in many ways. I think, yes, ebooks have got several appeals to them. One is often the price. I had a lady who called in to inquire about running a book club in the shop, which I said that would be absolutely a great idea. However, I would have to make a provision that all the members of the club buy their copy of the book from me to make it worthwhile.
Quite right.
He says, that's not going to be possible because at least half the group buy them on the Kindle. And she said that, in fact, some of their choices were based on what books were 99p on Kindle.
Indeed.
Which I smiled very politely about. Ebooks haven't really, I don't think, made the dent on the trade that perhaps people predicted they were going to do.
Good.
I think ebooks have, I mean, Kindles have an absolute place. I think if for people who do a lot of commuting, a lot of traveling, I mean, I must admit, if I'm going away on holiday, even just for a weekend, I take 3 or 4 books just in case the one that I thought I was going to fancy turns out that I didn't. And then I haven't got anything to read. So I'll take 3 or 4 just in case. In these days of strict baggage allowances, having a load of books in your Kindle makes an awful lot of sense. And that was what they were for. They were never intended to replace.
No, they weren't.
Paper book.
No.
And I don't think that they have.
No.
I think that they do, again, have a good benefit in that if you're not quite sure whether you're going to like a book or not, spending $2.99 or $3.99 or whatever on Kindle is a lot less of a risk than buying a paperback for $9.99. And I think that appeals to people as well. But I don't think it hasn't really hit the trade that much, although on the pandemic, I think, has hit the trade in the sense that people got more used to shopping online.
Definitely, yes.
And online has always been a problem anyway with the big river sites has always been a problem, but it has become more of a problem. And I do get people, and I know they do it. They come in and ask my advice about books. They say, I read a book by an author, and have they written anything else? And I call up my trusty fantastic fiction site and show them a little list of, and they have a nice look at the list, and I offer to order them for them, and they say they'll come back, and they don't. And I know exactly what they're doing. They're coming and mining me for information and going off and shopping.
You're being used, Bob. You're being used.
I am being used. An awful lot of what I do is more of a service.
Yeah, public relations.
Well, yeah, if I was doing this to be rich, then I would be very disappointed.
Yeah.
But I like to get people to read books. That's what I like to do.
Yeah. So any of you listeners who are anywhere near Crosby, Waterloo, Liverpool kind of area, or planning a day trip that way somewhere soon, go and see Bob at Right Blend and he will sort you out with some good books.
Even if you're visiting Liverpool City Centre, we are 15 minutes on the train.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got
2 minutes from the station.
Use these independent bookshops or lose them, and that would be so sad because
it would.
They're amazing. I love going in an independent bookshop when I find one. I'll have to come and see you, Bob, at yours.
You will. So, yes, it's a short walk from Crosby Beach, so you can go and see the Iron Men.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, day out.
Go and have a brew at Waterloo Sunset. Go for some tapas. Absolutely fantastic.
Sorted.
There you go.
Right, so on that happy note, yes. We'll draw this episode to a close. And thank you so much, Bob, for spending the time talking to us today. It's been a real eye-opener into the world of the independent bookshop and those people out there that still do it because they love books.
Yeah, and we'll try and remember to put the shop's details on the show notes as well. So those of you who are going to the website later.
Well, I mean, thank you for what you do as well to promote authors and bookshops. It's so valuable to us.
Oh, thank you. On yes. that note, a mutual congratulations.
Oh, no. I love it at the end, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Okay. Thank you again, Bob. It's been really interesting.
You're more than welcome. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob. Bye.
Bye.
And with that, we'll bring this episode to an end. Thank you so much for listening. And remember to hit the subscribe button, the like button.
Yes, enable the notifications so you know when the next episode is coming out.
Definitely, all those things. We're really, again, so grateful to people that listen, and we are amazed that we are getting the following we're getting, and very grateful as well. So until next time, from me and Liz.
Bye.
We'll see you soon. You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music in Peril was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.